WHR 1320 AM, W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Michael Toscano. ABC says their late-night show Jimmy Kimmel Live has been, quote, preempted indefinitely. FCC Chairman Brendan Carr characterized comments made by Kimmel Monday night related to the suspect in the assassination of Charlie Kirk.
What appears to be an action, by Jimmy Kimmel to play into that narrative that this was somehow a MAGA or Republican-motivated person.
Carr was on Benny Johnson's The Benny Show podcast. When the end came, it came swiftly.
When in the Los Angeles area, tourists often line up to watch a show taping outside the Jimmy Kimmel Live studio.
They just came out. They told us, we're really sorry, guys. Sorry for the inconvenience. I'm just going to have to ask everyone to leave.
Comments made by Kimmel during his Monday monologue about the murder of conservative activist Charlie Kirk have prompted Disney's ABC to pull the show indefinitely. President Trump on social media calls it great news for America. Jennifer Kuiper, CBS News.
President Trump attended a formal banquet hosted by King Charles and Queen Camilla, part of the pageantry and policy of a state visit.
I'm Vicky Barker in London. Let's face it, the Brits didn't roll out their biggest ever honor guard for President Trump because all those horses needed the exercise.
Every state visit often leads to an 8 to 10% increase in trade as a result of the agreements made.
Political scientist Inderjeet Parmar.
President Trump's next meeting is with Prime Minister Keir Starmer. Tech investment and steel tariffs are items on the agenda for discussion. Back home, Democrats have Republican budget plans to fund the government and avert a possible shutdown next month. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer.
We are confident when the American people contrast these two proposals, they're going to side with us. They're going to tell Republican congressmen and senators that they should start talking to the Democrats because we are talking about what people need.
Republicans say they're moving ahead with their temporary spending plan to keep the government funded until November 21st, with a vote in the House expected Friday. Correspondent Matt Piper checks new research on what happens to their brains after soccer players use their heads to hit the ball.
The study looked at 350 amateur soccer players, and the more they used their head to hit the ball, water molecule movement in the brain deteriorated, indicating more disruptions and suggesting worsening of the brain's microstructure. Researchers found that disruptions in the folds of the brain just above the eye socket partially affected the relationship between repeated head impacts and thinking and memory performance.
The study is published in the journal called Neurology. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report right here on 97.5 WFHR.
The Packers prepare for Cleveland. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NFL. The Packers face the Browns in Cleveland Sunday at noon. Although they're now 0-2, the Browns showed a good run defense against the Bengals and the Ravens. Matt LaFleur.
Really good players across really their whole defense. That's a big reason they're the top-ranked defense in football right now. But they've got a lot of guys that are a hard-penetrating front that cause a lot of problems for quarterbacks.
College football, Wisconsin Badgers host Maryland. Saturday at 11 a.m., the Terrapins are 3-0, Wisconsin 2-1. The Brewers going for a sweep after beating the Angels again last night, 9-2 in Milwaukee. Brandon Woodruff with 10 strikeouts, allowing just one run on two hits, getting his 10th win of the season.
Tonight was a big outing for me in terms of just getting the body back acclimated. You know, it's been roughly 10 days or whatever it was. And yeah, it was huge for me to get back out there. And my body got going there in the second, and then everything kind of back to normal.
That's the Brewers' Brandon Woodruff with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Farm news that impacts you and your community from the Midwest Farm Report throughout your day on 97.5 WFHR.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly cloudy, a little patchy fog forming in the overnight. Light winds, and we'll be near 60 at sunrise. After the patchy fog, look for a mix of clouds and sunshine, and a few showers and storms will get going. Highs warming to near 80 degrees. It's 66 at our studios.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Brittany Merlot will tell us how long our season of summer will continue. And the Brewers continued trying to wrap up their division. J.R. Radcliffe with more. Join us.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
Hey, everybody. Glad you could join us. I'm Tim Hubbelt, better known as the Polka Guy, on the Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show.
Join Tim every Saturday and Sunday for a great variety of polkas, waltzes, and more. Wake up at 7 a.m. on Saturday morning to get the weekend started on the right foot, then enjoy a lively Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. Same great show, two different times, one fun weekend. The Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show, 7 a.m. Saturdays and 1 p.m. Sundays, only on WFHR, locally grown radio.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
They're not there to serve you and me and the family farmer. They're there beholden to billionaires and their corporate overlords.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
See our nation fraying and fracturing.
This is not normal. This is not the country that I grew up in.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
Correct. We know better. We know better.
Clip that.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And happy hump day to one and all. We've got a small follow-up on our programming from yesterday. I was joined for half an hour of yesterday's program by State Representative Ahmad Rivera-Wagner. We were talking about the fact that the MAGA regime here in the state of Wisconsin has blocked efforts by Tony Evers and Democrats in the Assembly and Senate to fulfill funding for a veterans program that helps with addiction and most predominantly veterans that struggle with housing insecurity. It is, in our state budget terms, a measly less than $2 million. For some reason, Robin Voss and Devin Lemahieu, the leaders of the Assembly and Senate respectively, have been blocking even scheduling a hearing on bills to restore that funding for this critical program in the Green Bay area. So here's the follow-up. The bill that has been offered by Senator Wall, Representative Spaday, and Representative Rivera-Wagner, which is Senate Bill 385, Assembly Bill 383, was referred in the Senate to the Senate Committee on Licensing, Regulatory Reform, and State and Federal Affairs, which is chaired by Republican State Senator Chris Capanga. So we got an update. We're going to give you Chris Capanga's email and phone number so you can call him and tell him to schedule the hearing on these bills. Again, it's Senate Bill 385 to restore funding for a veterans program that helps unhoused veterans, also helps with a variety of other social services. Here is Senator Capanga's phone, 608-266-9174. That's 608-266-9174. And his email is senperiodcapanga, K-A-P-E-N-G-A, at legis.wisconsin.gov. So tell him to schedule the hearing so that we can treat our veterans with the respect that they deserve. A bit of civic media news as well today. It is the first official day of the Civic Media Today newsletter that you can find on Substack. I just subscribed today. You should go check it out. If you don't know what Substack is, just put it into the little internet web browser. It will pop up. You can subscribe to Civic Media Today. This is a brand new daily email newsletter on Substack that will connect you to all of the terrific content that we produce every day across the network, and it is free. So go ahead and check that out. Now, on to the day's news. The Fed has announced today that it will be cutting interest rates by 0.25%. Now, here's the interesting thing about that. People usually think, yay, that's great. Maybe my credit card interest rate goes down. It's cheaper to borrow. Yes, that's all true. But generally, when the Fed is cutting interest rates, it's because the economy is doing badly. And in this case, it's doing very badly. What the Fed is concerned about is rising unemployment, stagnating economy, the markets not loving what has been happening in the Trump economy, the 2.0 Trump tariff terror, and the rest of the nonsense that he's been peddling as actual economic policy. It's not going well, and it's going to get worse. Now, here's the interesting thing here, folks. All of the Fed governors, nearly all of them, voted for the 0.25% reduction. The guy that Trump just slammed through to get onto the Federal Reserve Board, yeah, he wanted a full half-point reduction. Yeah. Anybody surprised by that? I'm not. And we've got a new entrant into the already crowded Democratic primary field for the governor of this great state of Wisconsin, Francesca Hong. Representative Francesca Hong throwing her hat in the race today. She identifies herself politically as a Democratic socialist. So we'll see how that goes for Miss Hong. We hope to have her on the show soon to talk about that. And here's what I want to get to. It is full-blown Confederacy of dunces on Capitol Hill today, folks. Susan Monarez, or Monarez, I'm not quite sure how to say her name. I've heard both in the hearing today. She is testifying on Capitol Hill. This is the CDC director that RFK hired, then pressured to pre-approve whatever vaccine schedule recommendations would come out of the RFK vaccine denier skeptics now stocked board that reviews those things, to pre-approve them. That's not how it works, ladies and gentlemen. She refused to do so, stood and pushed back on some of the pressure coming from RFK in the White House. And then he fired her 29 days after he hired her. So she wrote an op-ed last week in the Wall Street Journal. It is scary. I highly recommend it. It's just a couple of pages. It's very scary. Here's a line from that. One of the troubling directives that meeting from that meeting, this is when she was called into to RFK's office. It was widely reported, lots of media outlets covered it. I was told to pre-approve the recommendations of a vaccine advisory panel newly filled with people who have publicly expressed anti-vaccine rhetoric. That panel's next meeting is scheduled for September 18th to the 19th. It is imperative that the panel's recommendations aren't rubber stamped, but instead are rigorously and scientifically reviewed before being accepted or rejected. Duh. Let's listen to some of what has happened today. And I want to start with this. If you recall, it was RFK's confirmation hearing, his confirmation, that came the closest to blowing up in Trump's face. Okay. There were big questions about whether Senator Susan Collins would ultimately vote for him. She did. But the biggest question mark, and in fact, the deciding vote on his confirmation, was cast by Senator Cassidy, a Republican of Louisiana, and a doctor who knows stuff and about vaccines. And he, during his 5 minutes of questioning of Mr. Kennedy during his confirmation hearing, asked him some really specific questions about the very thing that Dr. Monarez has said he's done and what he's planning to do with the vaccine schedule. Let's take a listen, because, again, listen to what Kennedy says in his confirmation hearing under oath before the Senate. Let's take a listen.
Do you commit that you'll revise any CDC recommendations only based on peer review, consensus-based, widely accepted science? In other words, not personal beliefs or the beliefs of any single person, that you or your department may identify?
Absolutely, Senator. I am not going to go into HHS and impose my preordained opinions on anybody at HHS. I'm going to empower the scientists at HHS to do their job and make sure that we have good science that's evidence-based, that's replicatable, where the raw data is published.
I'm almost out of time, so let me get to another question.
All right.
Do you promise that FDA will not deprioritize or delay review and or approval of new vaccines, and that vaccine review standards will not change from historical norms?
Well, we will have the best vaccine standards with safety studies, and I will not, if the
panels recommend. That's a little bit of a different answer than the question I asked.
Yeah.
Because what is the best could be in the eyes of the beholder. So let me read again. Promise that the FDA will not deprioritize or delay review and or approval of new vaccines, and that vaccine review standards will not change from historical norms.
Yes.
Yeah. Until apparently mid-September and tomorrow or the day after, when this vaccine advisory board packed with vaccine skeptics recommends some new schedule based on not peer-reviewed, not consensus science, but cherry-picked science by these wackadoodle vaccine deniers. And here's the thing. I don't get why they're doing this. Fine. Come in. Commission new studies. Look at the literature. Right? To test these things that you're concerned about, even though there are decades and decades of tests and statistics that prove that vaccines are safe. But redo this? Sure, go ahead. But that's not what they're doing. They're picking people based on their previously held vaccine skepticism, which is not based in peer-reviewed consensus, state-of-the-art medical and scientific knowledge, to then cherry-pick studies to come up with a vaccine schedule that is going to put our kids at risk. We've got the largest measles outbreak that our country has seen in a century. Why is that? Because people like RFK peddle in nonsense. So I want to go back to some of the testimony today from Dr. Menares, because it is scary. Let's take cut 21.
He directed me to commit in advance to approving every ACIP recommendation, regardless of the scientific evidence. He also directed me to dismiss career officials responsible for vaccine policy without cause. He said if I was unwilling to do both, I should resign.
That's not how it's supposed to work. It's just not how it's supposed to work. And all of us know that. And some of the things that Dr. Menares is claiming that Mr. Kennedy has said to other CDC officials is downright revolting and shocking. Take a listen to this.
And the one I think that hurt me the most was a particularly vivid phrase he said during the COVID outbreak. CDC told hospitals to turn away sick COVID patients until they had blue lips before allowing them to get treatment.
And it is fair to say, in your view, that those statements are not true.
Those statements are not true.
What? But it's the Confederacy of Dunces, ladies and gentlemen. What on God's earth would possess Mr. Kennedy to say such a thing? Other than someone who is inclined to believe conspiracy theories and every other, you know, completely ill-informed opinion that gets trafficked on the interwebs. This is from Wall Street Journal reporting. Menares also said Kennedy sharply criticized the CDC and his employees, calling it the most corrupt federal agency. He said CDC employees were killing children and that they don't care, that employees were, quote, bought by the pharmaceutical industry and forced people to wear masks like a dictatorship. Looney Tunes. RFK is an idiot. Is an idiot. An admitted drug user who said that he functioned better at the Ivy League university he got to attend because his name is Kennedy, when he was doing heroin or some such other. I mean, he admitted this on a podcast. This is the guy. It's going to put all of our kids at risk.
Some of the most recent reporting is specifically about the hepatitis B vaccine. We've basically eradicated that. It causes a long and painful death. We're going to return to this particular hearing on the other side. I might even bring you some cash money Patel, who continues his epic meltdown in front of Congress. Confederacy of dunces indeed. Folks, stay with me. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. A new analysis from Clean Wisconsin shows AI data centers in the state will use more power than all the homes in Wisconsin combined. Potential energy demand has been disclosed for just two projects in the state, the Vantage Data Center in Port Washington and Phase 1 of the Microsoft Data Center in Mount Pleasant. Those two projects alone require a combined 3.9 gigawatts of power, which is enough energy to power more than 4 million Wisconsin homes. Wisconsin has just under 3 million housing units in the entire state. Senator Tammy Baldwin has announced Senate passage of a bill that will help protect Wisconsin lakes from toxic algae. The legislation would improve monitoring, forecasting, and prevention of harmful algal blooms by requiring better coordination among task force agencies, state and local entities, and tribes. Right now on the Defender podcast, the Wisconsin Climate March is coming. Listen to find out more at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
This one goes out to the elder millennials. We're not as flashy as those other millennials and not as grungy as Gen X, but our music deserves another listen. Burn Before Listening features hits, deep cuts, and some authentic cringe. This is how you from 2000 to 2009, Burn Before Listening on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, Sundays at 9 p.m.
Make every day extraordinary with something special from Wisconsin. From artisan cheeses to fresh produce to maple syrup, the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection's Something Special from Wisconsin program is proud to work with member businesses that certify their Wisconsin-made and processed products. Look for the red and yellow sticker and visit somethingspecialfromwisconsin.com to find member businesses and products made with care, quality, and love. Sponsored by Wisconsin DATCP.
Your local Civic Media radio station is your source for real news and great conversation, plus fun and exciting contests. For a complete list of contest rules, log on WFHR.com/contest-terms. As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Everybody, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Dumpster fires galore, Cash Money Money Patel, RFK Jr. It is the Confederacy of Dunces brought to you by none other than the MAGA regime. Result? More death, basically. They are talking about, I've seen some reporting that is indicating that RFK Jr. and this vaccine advisory panel, which he's stocked with all these vaccine skeptics and wingnuts, are targeting or part of the childhood vaccine schedule changes that they're looking at is the hepatitis B vaccine, which is given basically like you're born, you get the hep B vaccine. Because it was a killer in the past, and it is a long, not long necessary, but is a painful death. It is highly transmissible. It is bloodborne. It's called a silent killer because it can become chronic before you have any symptoms. And then once you do find out because you have symptoms, you can die within like a week or two. This is a physician. His name's Brian McMahon, who treated some Hep B cases back in the 70s. Told me about a particular patient, 18 years old, 4-point GPA with a full ride to university. She kept having these stomach pains. she put off a week to the doctor. Finally, 2 weeks before she's supposed to graduate from high school, she comes in to see me. She had a big mass in her liver. I biopsy tested her for Hep B. She was positive, and it was liver cancer. And so I sat with her 2 weeks later when she died a horrible, painful death. This is a safe vaccine. And yet, people are thinking that this is part of what's going to get changed in these new vaccine protocols. And Dr. Rand Paul, who knows the science, was acting like this is some abomination. Listen to his questions and Susan Menares, former CDC director's response. Take a listen.
See, everybody's like blithely going along. We can't change the childhood. You're somehow terrible if you want to change the childhood. We should be discussing what is the childhood vaccine schedule. And you should be, the burden should be on you. You want to make all the kids take this? The burden is upon you and the people you wouldn't fire to prove to us that we need to give our six-month-old a COVID vaccine and that we need to give our one-day-old a hepatitis B vaccine. That's what the debate ought to be about, not whether all vaccines are good or whether we live in Alice in Wonderland.
I actually agree with you. And I was open to the science. I just would not pre-commit to approving all the ACIP recommendations without the science.
Untrue.
What a jerk. Shame on you, Senator Paul. You know better. Untrue. How do you know, sir? Were you in the room? I mean, Confederacy of Dunces. 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. Matt from Middleton, you're on the air. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi. First of all, small point of order. Remember, Rand Paul is like an eye doctor, so let's not give him too much credit.
Fair point, my friend. Fair point.
Yeah. Did we already forget that somebody took literal rifle shots at the CDC and a police officer was killed? Where was this call to tone down rhetoric and that political violence will not be tolerated when they seem to politicize everything while they've managed to turn vaccines and science and medicine into politics? And their rhetoric got a police officer killed. Where was the crackdown then?
Hear, hear, Matt. Thank you so much. That is literally the second thing that Susan Menares, former CDC director, said in her op-ed in the Wall Street Journal dated September 4th. Quote, during my first week as CDC director, a gunman opened fire on our Atlanta headquarters. Investigators recovered more than 500 shell casings at the scene and more than 180 rounds struck CDC campus buildings. Officer David Rose was killed. Where was all the right-wing outrage then? How about when our babies start dying from Hep B, a perfectly preventable disease, or measles? How bad does this nonsense have to get before people start standing up and saying, science is real. Vaccines are good. They save lives. Unbelievable. Ross from Crawford County, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, Maggie. Thanks for letting me out. Great show.
Thank you.
So I'll make a quick comment about the vaccine thing. I think there's a lot of people who don't have a science background who are concerned that vaccines cause problems with kids, okay? So, I mean, I would totally understand if Kennedy said, look, we're going to spend money and we're going to try to nail this thing down, but instead he's sort of just assuming already that these vaccines are a problem, and so he's causing all this it's in, like you said, insanity. But I'd like to switch to the economy, because the economy, the state of the economy right now is sort of a funny thing, because there was all these tariffs and then back and forth. It seems as if, like, there are two economies. So when one looks at the stock market,
mm-hmm. Go ahead, Russ.
It's going up. It's gradually going up. There was a short crash, but it's going up. So one could say on that end of things, you know, like the poop has not hit the fan yet. For working class people and people who may not be worrying about the stock market, it's really, I think you think of it as inflation and these kind of things. And inflation still isn't super high. It's like 3%. But I think what it is that these tariffs, I really believe that there was a big momentum during the Biden years, post COVID. People were spending money. The money was there, wherever it came from, I don't understand. But people were spending money and are still, like they said that this last month, that people were still spending a lot of money. So, but there are these indicators that say that there could be problems ahead. So I sometimes think with the economy, to the average person, it might look like it's okay. Prices are a little bit higher, but I think...
I got to hop in. Just one note on the economy. The stock market ain't the economy. What you feel in your pocketbook is, that is reality. And here's this. We haven't even come close to the worst of it. It will get worse. I promise you that. The prices will continue to go up. We're going to continue this great conversation. On the other side, I'm going to be joined by Representative Angelina Cruz. She used to be a teacher before she was an elected.
You're listening to Locally Grown Radio, WFHR.
You're listening to Locally Grown Radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m.
CBS News Brief. ABC Television is suspending its late-night show Jimmy Kimmel Live over comments Kimmel made Monday night in the aftermath of the killing of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. CBS's Jonathan Bigliotti.
Jimmy Kimmel Live debuted in 2003 and has long been a thorn in the side of politicians, including most notably President Trump, who pointed him out soon after the announcement ending the Stephen Colbert Show.
Fallon has no talent. Kimmel has no talent. They're next. They're going to be going. I hear they're going to be going.
In Great Britain, there was pageantry inside and protest outside Windsor Castle as King Charles hosted a formal dinner for President Trump. CBS's Remy Innocenzio reports.
The passion is here, but the people don't appear to be, compared to Trump's visit in 2018 when organizers said that something like 250,000 protesters came out against him. At least this looks and feels more muted.
CBS News Brief. I'm Michael Toscano.
The Packers prepare for Cleveland. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NFL. The Packers face the Browns in Cleveland Sunday at noon. Although they're now 0-2, the Browns showed a good run defense against the Bengals and the Ravens. Matt LaFleur.
Really good players across really their whole defense. That's a big reason they're the top-ranked defense in football right now. But they've got a lot of guys that are hard-penetrating front that cause a lot of problems for quarterbacks.
College football, Wisconsin Badgers host Maryland, Saturday at 11 a.m. The Terrapins are 3-0, Wisconsin 2-1. The Brewers going for a sweep after beating the Angels again last night, 9-2 in Milwaukee. Brandon Woodruff with 10 strikeouts, allowing just one run on two hits, getting his 10th win of the season.
Tonight was a big outing for me in terms of just getting the body back acclimated. You know, it's been roughly 10 days or whatever it was. And yeah, it was huge for me to get back out there. And my body got going there in the second, and then everything kind of back to normal.
That's the Brewers' Brandon Woodruff with Sports on Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Peach Wabba. The Emmy Awards were a lot of fun for actress Kristen Milioti, who won an Emmy for her role on The Penguin. Once the actual award show ended, though, the night went south. Literally, when Milioti took a tumble and dropped her Emmy while arriving at an after party. The actress plays Sofia Falcone in the Batman spinoff and beat out some pretty stiff competition in Michelle Williams, Rashida Jones, and Cate Blanchett. To the best of my knowledge, the Emmy was not hurt. More news from the Emmys, and more specifically, the show White Lotus. The previous 3 years saw White Lotus as an Emmy darling, but this year the cast was completely shut out despite all 7 supporting actors drawing nominations. White Lotus Season 3 won 1 Emmy this year for original main title music. If a show could win an Emmy award for beautiful settings, White Lotus would probably be 4 for 4. While on the red carpet, Season 3 stars Parker Posey and Jason Isaacs let it slip that Season 4 will take place in the south of France. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
97.5 WFHR, locally grown radio, and home to mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly cloudy, a little patchy fog forming in the overnight. Light winds, and we'll be near 60 at sunrise. After the patchy fog, look for a mix of clouds and sunshine, and a few showers and storms will get going. Highs warming to near 80 degrees. It's 66 at our studios.
This message is for Karina, our mom who finished her high school diploma at age 28. Hi, Mom. It's Amethyst and Nicholas.
Congratulations on getting your diploma.
You worked so hard and have taught us so much.
We love you.
When you graduate, they graduate. Finish your high school diploma for you and for them.
Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free and supportive adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Retirement can be scary, but only if you're not prepared. That's why AARP created thisispretirement.org. Because unless you've already retired, you're in pretirement and you still have time to plan. Learn about retirement savings options, potential tax breaks, and how you can build savings over time. Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan and feel the retirement fear disappear. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwabba. On the next Nightlight, I welcome Capital Times writer Victoria Davis, who will make the popcorn pick of the week. Then Civic Media Sports Authority Mike Clemens joins us to update us on everything Wisconsin sports.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's Wednesday. It's 4:30, and it's time for one of my favorite segments of the week. We call it Broad Appeal because I talk to amazing women elected officials and political leaders, movement organizers, and activists from across the state and beyond, because women in those roles have broad appeal. Also, I'm happy to call myself broad. I mean it with deep and reverential respect. With all of that, super happy to bring to the show this afternoon Representative Angelina Cruz of Assembly District 62 from the Racine area. Welcome to the program. It's great to have you here.
It's great to be here, Maggie. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really excited.
Yes, me too. You are a almost brand spanking new legislator, which is so amazing. But I want people to hear from you about your decision to run for office and how that really came to be, because this is the story that I hear in different versions and forms every single time I talk with, and I think it's very pronounced, with women elected officials. They're doing their job, they're working in their communities, and they'll see a problem or a need. And it really becomes this catalyst, this call to serve. So tell folks, you're a teacher. You've been a teacher for a long time, teaching middle schoolers, fifth graders. Tell us how that work got you into the teachers union and some involvement there and how this all evolved. How did you become Representative Cruz?
That is a really great question. I like to point out to people that being a politician or legislator was nothing that I had ever aspired to do with my life. Some days I wake up and wonder, is this what I want to keep doing? And I say that jokingly. I am very happy to be in the legislature serving the people of Assembly District 62. But it was quite a journey. I did start teaching in 2003. So for over two decades, I have identified myself as a proud public school teacher, and started as a fifth grade elementary school teacher at Dr. Jones Elementary in Racine, Wisconsin. So it was a K-5, very much in the elementary world. In about 2010, I graduated from UW-Milwaukee with a degree in educational policy. And so that was sort of my world, my trajectory. I just thought that I would be a fifth grade elementary school teacher forever. Fast forward to February 2011.
Yep.
And our governor at that time, Scott Walker,
yes,
passed the budget repair bill, which included...
Let's not call it that. Let's just call it straight up union busting. That's what he did.
thank you, ma'am. Yeah, that indeed is what he did, which really activated... I know I am not unique in terms of that landscape having activated just a world of unionists fighting back, and that was sort of the fire starter, if you will. And so it was at that time that Act 10 was passed, a union-busting bill that targeted specifically public sector workers, and I would argue most specifically public school teachers, educators, really from, you know, the K-12 world all the way up to the university level. Public education became, public educators became public enemy number one to the state legislature. And it was at that time that I, it awakened in me the understanding that I needed to really invest in my local union in order to defend public education as we knew it at that time in the state of Wisconsin. So I became a building representative in my little elementary school. From there, I became the political action committee chairperson. I became an elected officer and sort of worked my way up to being elected as the president of my local. At the time, it was Racine Education Association. I'm still an REA member, but internally, our two bargaining units, the REA and the REAA, have since combine their governance structure. So we sort of move as one.
Yes.
Internally, we recognize that we needed to combine our efforts, that our struggles were the same.
Yes.
And so from that point on, I was the first Latina to be elected to that position in 2016. And I remain the sitting president of Racine Educators United, which is the umbrella of the REA and the REAA. So I'm serving both as the local union president and as the state elected legislator for Assembly District 62 currently.
Keeps you busy, I would imagine.
Sure it sure does.
One thing that I wanted to talk with you about is we truly have in the state of Wisconsin a public education massive defunding that has been going on. It started under Scott Walker in the Republican-controlled legislature. And the defunding is coming in all sorts of ways and forms. It's a little bit like death by a thousand, and I'm not going to call them paper cuts because it's bigger, but like death by a million gashes kind of thing. So it's both not fully funding, not meeting the needs of school districts, rural and urban. All school districts are hurting right now. But it's also the siphoning of funds out of public schools for voucher schools, which are basically can discriminate at will, reject any student they want, have little to no accountability, not that's on a state level at all. It really depends on the district you're in and how the district tends to operate and oversee, if at all, voucher schools. There is no long-term study that I'm aware of that has ever shown that voucher programs produce better academic results over the long term for kids. So that it's a dubious proposition. Now, I'm going to say all that and say this. Back in the day in Milwaukee, it was a powerful tool to give largely Black and brown families some additional choices because we had stupidly decided to fund public schools through property taxes, a proposition that will never make any damn sense to me. But I wanted to give you the opportunity to speak a little bit about this because I know that you just introduced a bill to address this failure of the state to be accountable to fund the public schools that benefit businesses and are very much in the best interests of our kids.
Right. So that is, let me think about where to start with that. So, you're correct. The state of Wisconsin is failing to meet its constitutional obligations to deliver a free and fair public education to all the children of the state of Wisconsin, and has been systematically divesting from the public school system for the better part of over two decades. So I would argue it started even before Scott Walker. Scott Walker accelerated it, if that is even,
yes. Yep.
I mean, it's a little mind blowing, right? So 2011, as a teacher unionist, as a union president, we very much characterize Act 10 and the attack on teachers' unions. We understand it as Scott Walker and the Republican legislator going after the last line of defense in public school standing in the state of Wisconsin. So I also like to point out that even though there was this concerted attack against our collective bargaining rights and stripping us of those, we still exist.
Right.
Racine Educators United is one of the largest local labor unions in the state of Wisconsin. The Wisconsin Education Association Council, which is our state affiliate, is the largest labor union in the state of Wisconsin. And we are all affiliates of the National Education Association, which is the largest labor union in the country. So we still exist. We're still here. We're still fighting. And that is really sort of what keeps, to the best of our ability, the attack at bay. But we're really, we've come up to a point in time in which I don't see how what we are suffering under is sustainable.
No, it's absolutely not tenable. Like, the dam is breaking and cracking and the water is starting to rush down the river. It's like every single county, every single school district, I feel like, has had to go to a referendum. I was so disgusted and appalled by efforts to introduce legislation by the MAGA regime in this state to ban that practice, to actually, and it's like, what is your point? You won't sufficiently fund the schools, and now you'll take away the one tool they have to scrape and claw their way to at least some way to MacGyver from year to year, and they want to strip that away. I have to ask, why? If the public, if that community votes for a referendum to raise their property taxes to fund their schools, what business is it of the state to step in and say, you can't do that? It's an abomination. I wanted to also make this point, and I don't think it gets made quite enough, about voucher schools and some of their awful, awful history in this country. They really first came about, we understand a voucher to be taking public taxpayer monies that would have otherwise gone into your public schools and sending it to a private, unaccountable, unregulated, no standards, doesn't know if it works, other private school that can discriminate. The first time we saw these en masse in this country was after Brown v. Board of Education. They were called and are now known as segregation academies, and they sprung up all across the South. And their explicit purpose was to allow schools to not permit Black students to attend, but to use public money to fund those schools. We see that operating in a very similar way, meaning they're not saying it's for just white kids, because that would maybe get them in trouble. But the result is, especially in a large district like Racine or Milwaukee, that you have kids, we are segregating our schools. And I just wanted to read this very brief statement. This is from the White Citizens Council, okay? This is its journal back from 1964. It was in Mississippi, okay? Their journal was called The Citizen. And they were trying to encourage white parents to send their white kids to these now all-white segregation academies that didn't permit Black kids to attend and were funded by taxpayer dollars. Here's what this magazine said. See if it sounds familiar to you, Representative. Parents want their children to be raised and educated free from the tensions of racial conflict in the classroom, free from the frustrating drag of mass mediocrity, and free from the blight of self-styled progressive educators whose avowed aim is to turn young Americans from the established inheritance of their fathers to alien theories of collectivism and anti-white racism. It's as if those words were spoken by Charlie Kirk yesterday, or J.D. Vance, or Donald Trump, or any of the other woke police that has been invented out of nowhere. I'm going to stop my rant. We're going to take care of a little bit of business. I'm going to come back with Representative Cruz. Again, she's from Assembly District 62 out of Racine. And we're going to talk about what's coming next. How do we shore up our public schools? How do we solve this problem? Because the kids indeed are our future, and we owe them far better than what Republicans have been delivering for our kids in this state. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Smokey the Bear.
Then you know why Smokey tells you when he sees you passing through. Remember, please be careful, it's the least that you can do.
What you desire, don't play with matches, don't play with fire.
After 80 years of learning his wildfire prevention tips, Smokey Bear lives within us all. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com. And remember,
only you can prevent wildfires.
Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
You wanted to be cool, which led you to smoking, which led to a pack a day. Then you met that special someone, which led to starting a life with them, which led to wanting to live longer, which led to quitting. Then you heard you may be at risk for lung cancer, which led you to getting a low-dose CT scan. If you smoked, get scanned. Talk to your doctor and learn more at savedbythescan.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
I'll trust water bottles and a flashlight to save the day, but I'll be proved wrong.
With a tornado approaching, I'll realize that I lack a wheelchair-accessible shelter.
When the floodwaters rise, I'll be up in the attic with 20 cans of beans. It's a recipe for disaster.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Adoption of teens from foster care is a topic not enough people know about, and we're here to change that. I'm April Dinwiddie, host of the new podcast, Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Each episode brings you compelling real-life adoption stories told by the families that live them with commentary from experts. Visit adoptuskids.org/podcast or subscribe to Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families and the Ad Council.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are in this week's segment of Broad Appeal, a segment we bring to you every Wednesday at 4:30, where we talk to women elected officials, political leaders, activists, organizers, and folks that need to hear from women more. This is the place to find them every week, 4:30 on this very program. We've got Representative Angelina Cruz of Assembly District 62. She is a lifelong teacher. She now also is the president of Racine Educators United and, of course, is serving Assembly District 62 and her wonderful state legislature. We're happy to have her here. Before the segment, we were talking about some of the terrible history of voucher schools. They were first used en masse all across the Deep South following the Brown v. Board of Education to set up segregation academies using taxpayer dollars. They have always been used as a way to siphon dollars away from free, widely available public education. And you wanted to talk a little bit about what went down in this last biennial budget about voucher school funding versus public school funding, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So I will say openly that I voted against the state budget. I primarily ran on a platform of pro public education, I think, that to no one's surprise. And so I was very disappointed with what was put forward in terms of it not being enough. As we covered earlier, we've had over two decades of disinvestment in the public school system. And so what was put forward in terms of public school funding, we had some modest increases to special education reimbursement, 42% the first year, 40 up to 45% in the second year. But we also had that in conjunction with $0 in new general aid for both years in the biennium.
Yeah.
And so while we won modest increases to special education, that should never have precluded in putting money into general aid.
General aid for schools, and every school has been having massive problems. And I think they've gotten worse post-COVID, right? Because you've seen enrollment slightly drop in public schools. A lot of public school funding is driven on a per pupil basis. They're counting heads literally when the school year starts, as any teacher will tell you. And I wanted to just lean into the special education funding reimbursement rate for a moment, if you will.
Absolutely.
Because it is one of the grossest inequities that is so clear that you can point to. First problem between voucher schools and public schools is voucher schools can decline admission to any student who might need an individualized education plan, right? Mm-hmm. The IEPs or disabled students. So, we don't want to do that. Public schools can't. They are the educator of last resort. And so the idea that a public school special education reimbursement rate would be at, say, let's just call it 45%. When a voucher school's reimbursement rate, courtesy of Scott Walker and the MAGA regime here in the state of Wisconsin, is at 90%. I think it's even a little over 90. What is the reimbursement, and why are those rates so important? And why is the failure to increase them for public schools creating a real and active daily harm to public schools?
Correct. So the reimbursement rate is related to the billing amount that it costs to deliver services that are stipulated in individualized education programs. So services that special education teachers and special education teams determine. So those are comprised of not just the teachers, but also administrators and advocates and parents, in many cases, the students themselves. They come up with a plan to make sure that the needs of the child are met in the educational setting. And then once those services are delivered, teachers are responsible for documenting and submitting billing. And so what the state of Wisconsin is currently reimbursing those costs at are about 30% is what they currently stand. So we just bump that up to 42% this first year. They'll be reimbursed. Where does the rest of that cost then come from? What covers the other 70%? That comes from the general funding sources. So the funding sources that we get through the general aid are pure pupil expenditures that are allotted to districts, and that total amount, the money is then pulled from that pool of money.
It's like a double whammy, right? Mm-hmm. So the public schools have more on a relative basis, meaning how many sped students to as a proportion of your total school population. Public schools now have a higher proportion of sped students as compared to what they did even 10 years ago, because voucher schools will decline admission to kids that have complex special needs. And so it's pulling out of the general fund, which they don't have enough money from to begin with, and they're getting a double whammy because they don't get reimbursed like the voucher schools do. It makes me so mad. Yeah. So, Representative Cruz, what are we going to do about this?
Yeah.
How do we
begin
to...
I also want to...
Please.
Underscore, so we got $0 in new general aid for both years in the biennium. However, voucher and charter schools taxpayers are on the hook for about $1.8 billion guaranteed for funding that system, those systems, over the next 2 years. So fully funded voucher charter schools, not funded public schools, which are the only schools with the commitment, the capacity, and the legal obligation to serve every child that walks through their doors.
We're gonna have to leave it there. I'm so sorry. Time flies when you're having fun with Representative Angelina Cruz. She's got legislation to make the state accountable. Call your state rep and senator and tell them to support Representative Cruz's legislation to fully fund our children's future. Up next, I'm joined by General Russell Honoré. It's going to be an incredible discussion. He was the general that...
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Michael Toscano. Comments made by Jimmy Kimmel on his late-night ABC TV show Monday caused the network to take it off the air indefinitely. Here's some of what he said.
We hit some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it.
FCC Chairman Brendan Carr responded with, "This is a very, very serious issue," on the Benny Johnson podcast, adding, quote, "We can do this the easy way or the hard way." CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti reports on what came next.
ABC Network announced that Jimmy Kimmel Live will be preempted indefinitely, saying it, quote, strongly objects to recent comments made by Mr. Kimmel concerning the killing of Charlie Kirk. That came after Nexstar Media Group, one of the biggest owners of local TV stations in the country, said it was pulling the late night show.